with the instructions this morning, I'd like to speak for a few minutes about the totality of the day. And though a day and life itself cannot actually, in real terms, be divided, it's an indivisible event, but we as human beings, we introduce time and form and, as it were, make divisions during the day. So, small and the simple one here, there is a day with the forms. The primary forms are sitting, walking, standing and reclining as the meditation forms. There is also the time when the Sangha meets together, such as right now, in which there's the form of our being together, and one of us has the privilege of offering and sharing the teachings. There's also the form of the small groups, the meal times, the one-to-one meetings. So these different forms help to make up the sense of the day. But also, and equally important, there are plenty of moments throughout the flow of the day which are not so much about the forms, rather formless. And sometimes we are experiencing just a rather quiet time. We may not be in the hall, we may not be engaged in any formal sitting, or walking or standing meditation. And just life is just unfolding itself, and we may be sitting on the chair outside, taking a walk, or going to the toilet or in the shower, and all the other things which make up everyday life both here and elsewhere. And it's genuinely worthwhile with these formless periods to take a real interest in them, to really notice and observe all the small things that make up the formless time, so that there is a real sense of curiosity and interest and mindfulness and presence to the whole of the day. And when a human being is deeply interested in the fullness of the day, our mind and thought hardly needs to drift or wander into memory. We hardly need to give much thought to the future, perhaps a little planning, which doesn't take much time, or a short recollection of some experience in the past, because we feel we can get some insight and learn from it. And there is a genuine, authentic, and rather effortless sense of the fullness of the day. One is in a very deep, ongoing relationship with the fullness of the day, and the whole of the day has much to offer. And that interest and that connection with the day puts our life into order. It contributes to a genuine sense of harmony with life, because we prefer to be in touch with the authentic and the real than to live in the imaginary, to live in the speculative, to live in yesterday or to live in tomorrow. So the forms of the day and the formless times of the day here genuinely matter equally. With instructions, a little bit of repetition and from yesterday, and a little bit of expansion as well. Because there are some fairly subtle changes in the instructions, I do appreciate that it, at times it may be a little confusing. And if there is any confusion, then do remember the simple, clear, regularly stated point. If there is some confusion, make good use of the breath. If one is having thoughts and ideas, I'm not sure what I should be doing right now, it's not clear to me, these teachers are beyond being hopeless, then just remember the single point, the breath is the anchor. The breath is the steadying point. The breath is the means to keep present and keep alert and conscious. So we make the reference point, the thread, through every day here in the form and in the formless, that the breath is the place to return back to, particularly if there is some confusion or uncertainty or doubt around what to do, or a daydream or a fantasy or imagination or speculative theories or whatever. Okay, breath. Make it the anchor point. We then, as the good text encouraged here, offered some expansion. And one has to remember with this, in terms of the meditation and in terms with the general experience, form and formless, that there are features of it, and the two features give support to each other. And it's important to remember the two. One is the experience, the bare experience of being alive, engaged in the processes we are engaged in. What is one's experience? And as teachers, we are checking in with you, and of course you are checking in with yourself. The second, not more important, not less important, but certainly important, and that is insight. I don't want to go on about the tradition of all of this, but very, very briefly, the Buddha teaches meditation, and in the teaching of meditation, the priority is for calmness of being and for insight. And the word for calmness is samatha, there. And the word for insight, very precise translation with the Pali, is vipassana. So sometimes people think vipassana is a method and technique, and certainly some traditions will speak of it in that way. But in the teachings from the Buddha, it's meditation for calmness, and the joy and the happiness, but it is also for insight. And the insight which come may arise in connection and in accordance with the processes. So it's the word vipassana, passa means contact, vi means to double. So in other words, something stands out a little bit more clearly. Something which you and I had not really noticed before, had not really seen before, that's the passage, not really seen before. You suddenly see it more clearly. Ah, yes, now I see it more clearly. Now I understand it better. That is vipassana. Vipassana is an insight into an event, into an encounter, into an experience. That insight may be related to yesterday, meaning the past. It may be related to tomorrow, meaning the future, or today. And therefore we have a deep, abiding interest in experience, for calmness and clarity, and for insight. It can happen that an insight come, and some people will trust in the insight. The person will have a sense, the insight, what's clear to me, is deep enough. I don't have to write it down. I don't have to make any effort to remember it. It's something is clear, it is deep, and it will naturally transfer and move into the daily life. It will really be a help for me. Others will say, I need to put something down. I need a pen, I need a paper, I need to write it down, and just a few words or a sentence or two, to give myself, perhaps later on, including back at home, some opportunity to reflect on the insight I had on this retreat, and therefore to make that insight applicable. So one is trusting it's gone deep, it will stay, and one applies, or there's a sense that it is important, there's so much going on, I might forget, I put it down on pen and paper, and with a view to applying. So, the experience is there, and the insights, as I say, may be directly related to being here, in your experience, and it may be elsewhere. The insights which come, and the path of the process here, may come from the listening. In fact, many, many primary insights come from listening. So, you listen to some aspect, some part of the body of the teachings, and in the course of the listening, something touches. This is important. I need to remember this. I need to reflect on this. I need to apply this, whatever it might be. And that, therefore, the act of the listening to the teachings or the instructions contributes to the insight, and then the insight gives one support. It's important because it's a movement away from having to believe something and making a deep human shift to a listening to see if it's workable and can be applied for you. We must trust in the experience and also with the insight. With the day, just going back to the instructions again for a moment or two. Keeping the thread, the anchor point, as I say, the breath. That's a great support for us, both physically, since we can't live without breathing, and emotionally and psychologically, because it's a good centering place. It may be, for some, as touched upon yesterday, with the instructions, if you know you tend to have bodily issues, you know you have a lot of bodily issues there. The issues will generate the gap between the consciousness and the body. So the closer the consciousness, which means the mindfulness and the concentration, gets to the body, the more the intimacy and the closeness, the more the clarity can come. For some, the issues around body are around health and sickness, common. Pleasure and pain would be another. Another weight, of course, would be another, and another would be appearance, definitely. So the mind very easily can get, because of its detachment from the body, which is unhealthy, owing to the detachment from the body, in the gap, the mind can produce all sorts of judgmental views and opinions. And we could probably all write a list of the things physically we don't like about ourselves. And as every decade goes by, the list gets longer. And this is a cut-off. So getting close to the body is freeing us up from the projections of the body, what I like about myself physically, what I don't like about myself physically, and all the approvals and the disapprovals, and all the judgments, which also go upon others as well. To see that we get so close to the body, really experiencing the body, and just seeing the body, as has been said, as elements, as organic life, as an expression of evolution, as cells, as a biology, as DNA, and learn to see it in that way, and feel at home being with the body. And correspondingly, as we get closer to the body and more connected with it, without holding and clinging, it may be that some insights come about it. Do I need in my daily life to really look at diet? Am I consuming too much fat and sugar and salt? Do I need to look at my relationship to health and to the treatment of animal, birds and fish? Do I need to eat less of this and more of that? So as we get close to the body, we begin to recognize the needs of the body. We begin to look at that, and those changes come from clarity. They can come from a great deal of insight, while being mindful and vigilant of, obviously, of not getting obsessive about it. Buddhism is hopeless on diet. Like most religions, it doesn't have a clue there. And it's the changes which are coming, somewhat inspired, I must say, by the Hindu tradition, which has a much healthier, wiser, and more skillful relationship to diet, and much through the genuine, sincere efforts of many of us, looking in which we are saying to ourselves and each other, what goes into my mouth is as important as what comes out of it. And that's an important area of exploration. The issue at the time of the Buddha hardly applied. Wonderful forests. Totally 110% organic food. No chemicals. And a healthy diet and a culture which was primarily vegetarian. Much more sane. So sometimes here people look and say, I need to make some changes. And there's some insight and understanding there, and that gets carried. It may be with exercise as well. Of bringing air and oxygen to the body. So all of these processes which are going on, there are the meditation, with also the experience and the insight. In the calming of the body, that may be a priority, the relaxation of the body, being close to the body, and therefore emerging out of that harmony with the body and giving good support there. If one has a sense that is one situation, please, please do make it a priority over the days. And those changes can bring about a lot of good health, a lot of good energy, and a real sense of well-being. And perhaps most important of all, or very important, is this self-image that we carry about ourselves, often negative, that can go away. It is an image. And human beings suffer as a consequence of living in an image. And living in an image means a cut-off from living in the real. And the real is the life, the physical life, is elements, an organic life, worthy of love, worthy of our respect. It's an extraordinary thing to be human, giving real care and sensitivity to it. We then began to make the shift, and the shift more towards heart and mind. And with the shift towards heart and mind, connecting with the breathing, and in its connection with the breathing, the place of happiness and joy. Sometimes the happiness and joy is coming just from the actuality of being in such an environment. As I mentioned to you, the experience of the happiness and the joy is liberating, because it's liberating from the unhappiness and the pain. So it has a liberating function to it. The experiences of the happiness and joy can be, and often are, very, very subtle. Sometimes it comes, you know, with good humor, extraordinary memory. Sometimes people's energies are very, very high. I think the record on a retreat, I remember, with a German guy, Bud Gaya, he started laughing at 1 in the afternoon, and he finished around the hot drink time at 9:30. And one thing was sure, he just kept laughing and had no reason for it. Some people thought he was crazy, but I tend to take the view that those who don't laugh are crazy. And so all this energy was flowing out and flowing through the day, and so he's out on the lawn laughing, and we're sitting in the hall laughing, and so we laughed on. And then the hot drink came, then the good things of life. Anyway, so sometimes joy and love and laughter and passion, or all of that can just, sometimes it just breaks through. It just comes through. And to really recognize that, sometimes, as I say, in the strong form, more often and more frequently, it's more subtle. Just sense of well-being and inner life, just feeling this happiness, and again to repeat, to feel the happiness, let the breath be a little bit more in the background at the time, and just feel that happiness, and it might be touching the cells of the body, and the general sense of happy to be alive, happy to be here, happy to be in the company of loving people, in a caring environment. And just to feel that happiness. As it gets even more quiet, as mentioned to you, the feeling of it shifting from a happiness, which is a little stronger, to joy, which is more subtle. Always with going deeper and with more inner space, it will, and it needs to, allow that which has not been addressed in one's life to arise. And if you sometimes at home, if you put some potatoes in the boiling water there, and if there's any dirt on the potatoes, people like me don't peel them properly. And the light goes on, and as all the black froth from these dirty potatoes kind of comes up to the surface there. It's a perfect parallel for our mind. So we're sitting on the cushion. It's the equivalent of putting the saucepan on top of the oven. The heat is turned on. Sit, walk, etc. And with the passage of the time, that which has not been addressed will quite often, the froth will just float up to the surface there. And that will gets referred to in the tradition as the hindrances. That which hinders clarity, hinders peace of mind. And five primary ones are referred to. And again, something we work with, we explore, we recognize what arises, stays for a while and passes, it's in transition there. One is wanting, and sometimes there is some intensity of wanting, habits, addictions, obsessions, neediness, pressure on others, pressure on ourselves, pressure to do it well. There's a pressure, there's a wanting. 100. Second is in the area of negativity, blaming ourselves, finding fault with others, negative self image that's being carried, and much else. A third is boredom. Boredom's always a popular one with the meditators. And some apathy. So where there is some boredom, it can easily bring about some tiredness. If there is quite a lot of boredom in the daily life, and one just kind of feels bored rather a lot, the boredom is often an indication that underneath the boredom, one is irritated about something and one's not looking at it. So boredom sometimes can be a cover-up for negativity. And cut through the boredom and say, okay, what am I feeling agitated that really needs some working with? Fourth one is restlessness, including anxiety. And the fifth one is doubt, which also includes fear. Sometimes in the experience of the days, we may be experiencing one or more of these hindrances. And they are a great challenge for us to work with, but they certainly are part of the practice. So just to repeat them here, the wanting with all the pressure and its dependency on results, that's one. The negativity, inner and outer, two. Boredom, apathy, three. Restlessness, anxiety, four. Fears, doubts, five. Sometimes we look at ourselves and we say, oh, one or two of these is really familiar to me. I'm often really feeling negative. I really have a lot of doubts about myself or about life or about what I'm doing or whatever. So if you notice here and elsewhere that one or two of these hindrances stand out, then human task, human response is, okay, I'm really going to work with those. I'm really going to see if I can transform this negativity I feel towards myself or towards others or both, or whatever the others are. I'm really feeling anxious about the future. I'm really going to practice to be much more present, breathe in and out, and dissolve the anxiety. So sometimes we really have to use the samadhi, the concentration, to focus on these hindrances. And this needs to be said, that the power of the mindfulness, the power of insight, the power of concentration, and the power of good friendship can dissolve any problematic mind state. It's because doesn't have the power we have given it. The human beings can be free from all of this stuff. But it may really require a real attention, as we're touching upon, and also, so that we don't get obsessive about it, we keep saying, look, here is also the antidote, and the antidote is relaxation, it is calmness, it is recognizing happiness, it is experiencing joy, and to keep that equally alive and recognized as well. Then finally, told myself I wouldn't talk for 45 minutes today. And then finally we spoke yesterday about the experiencing of the mind. Quite something, you know, to really experience the mind. And the reason why it's important is it's the only instrument we've got to look at this world. There ain't nothing else. Because it's either experience the mind and work with it, and that does mean in the experience of the mind, because it's through the mind, it means consciousness and thought and feelings, the only instrument that can enable us to look at this world. And what is remarkable, though we keep forgetting, we can look at ourselves. How about that? I mean, isn't that just cool? A human being can close her or his eyes and turn the consciousness inwardly and say, these are the feelings that are taking place in this mind. These are the thoughts. This is the state of mind that's going on. This is a deep mind. This is a calm mind. This is an agitated mind. This is a mind with hindrances. This is a mind with a multiple hindrance attack in which they're all going on at the same time. Alright, this is the mind that can do that. And we can be quite clear about that. And like one person said, my practice, I'm so unclear, Christopher, about what I'm doing. And I said to a few people over the years, gosh, you sound incredibly clear about it. So here's this extraordinary situation where we can, as human beings, we can be completely clear that we're unclear. I mean, that's just cool. And so we can give attention to that which is taking place. We can look at it, we can work with it, we can change it, and we can transform it, we can get some insights into the event, which is called the mind. And since it's, as it, to repeat, the single instrument that we've got, if we had another one, we'd say, okay, I'll drop the mind and I'll do something else to look at this world, to look at myself. We haven't. So, if the inner life is in good condition, and is happy and joyful with love and empathy and has the capacity to forgive and to be clear, if the inner life is in a healthy condition, whoa, look at the benefits. Look at the relief for other people. Gosh, so nice living with a person who's not demanding, and not negative, and not complaining, and not worried, and not anxious. When we come here, there are lots of people out there saying, oh, please change. Please come home different from when you got here. I mean, we're actually here for them, etc. I mean, a few of you know, some of you, your good friends, your parents and your lover and your kids or whatever it might be, say, look, I'll pay for the taxi to you to go here. Just stay a week, 2 weeks. You know. Stay a year with Tobino. Yeah, please go. I'll be here when you come back, maybe. So it's not a kind of selfish inner world of just me, me, me. How we are as a human being, it must go, because we're all family, we're all connected. It must go outwardly as well. And sometimes we kind of need to remind ourselves of this. In the exploration as well, the Buddha uses in this tetrad, this section here, of gladness, very lovely. It's an appreciation. And the feeling of gladness. And it might be worthwhile again, because mindfulness and reflection, as the Buddha said, are two limbs for full awakening. Mindfulness and reflection are two limbs, indispensable limbs. And we can bring in some reflection in our time here, and sometimes to reflect very simply, what do I feel glad about today? What am I glad about today? And just to see what the inner life brings up for us. And sometimes it's a little bit of a surprise to us of just small things that we're glad about that we hardly notice. But those small drops are really, really precious. But we've got to notice them. We need to be mindful of them. So the text here is giving great encouragement to us to really bring gladness, the blessings of life, to really acknowledge them, to really be clear about them, and let that really be part of our meditation process in the postures there. And then in the final section there, uses the one of these key words of freeing. And sometimes we hear the big buzzwords, from some of us enlightenment and awakening and liberation and the one reality and the, I ask, the infinite and the immeasurable and the vast and the deep, etc. A whole range of concepts, even from time to time, that word G-O-D, I can't remember how you pronounce it. And so sometimes the sense of something big, something vast, there. And the Buddha takes a, that sound too complicated here, relative and ultimate approach. And what is meant by that is, part of the recognition is, when, as an example, one feels clear and calm in the meditation, when, for example, in the formless period, one feels joy and happiness or experience of gladness, he says, in this time, one is free from the hindrances. When one feels concentrated and focused with the interest there, in this time, one is free from the wandering mind, the daydreaming mind, or obsessing about the past or the future. Sometimes in the deeper experiences, one feels it's gone deeper. He says, when it's gone deeper, at that time, one is free from the less deep experiences. So one thing which is beneficial and important, which is acknowledged, experienced and appreciated, is a freedom from something else. In this sense that within the valuable experiences, this is the important thing, in the valuable experiences for us, there is a freedom in that experience. In the valuable experiences which you and I enjoy and we acknowledge, we might call it calmness, or clarity, or love, or happiness, or depth of meditation, or equanimity, or seeing change, or letting go. In those experiences, there is a freedom in those experiences. That freedom there is the whisper and sometimes the shout of what a full freedom is of a human being, which is called liberation. The authentic liberation and the freedom are not separate from each other. So sometimes during the day, in this freeing of the mind, as referred to, it may come to you, possibly with a little reflection as well, it may come to you, whoa, I feel free. I don't feel under pressure from these hindrances. I don't feel harassed and making demands on myself or others. I'm feeling a sense of being free. And that recognition of the sense of being free is really precious and important. And to really acknowledge that, because that is the clear intimation of what an authentic liberation is all about. Okay, thank you. Let's just have a quiet minute. 40 minutes. May all beings live mindful lives. May all beings live with gladness. May all beings know the taste of a free life.